Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
Today we hear the stories of the two families who were antagonists in the great Mahabharata war, the Pandavas descending from King Pandu and the Kauravas of the Kuru dynasty, and also of their great teacher, Dronacharya.
The five sons of Pandu, the Pandavas, and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra grew up in mirth and merriment at Hastinapur. Bhima excelled them all in physical prowess.
For amusement, I shall bully Duryodhana and the other Kauravas by dragging them by the hair and beating them. As a powerful swimmer, I'll dive into the pool with one or two of them clasped helpless in my arms and remain underwater till they are almost drowned. And when they climb up on a tree, I shall stand on the ground and kick at the tree and shake them down like ripe fruits.
Oh, the bodies of the sons of Dhritarashtra would be ever sore with bruises as a result of Bhima's practical jokes. Small wonder that the sons of Dhritarashtra nursed a deep hatred for Bhima from their very infancy. As the princess grew up, Kripacharya taught them archery and the practice of arms and other things that princes should learn. Duryodhana's jealousy toward Bhima warped his mind and made him commit improper acts. Duryodhana was very much worried.
Since my father was born blind, the kingdom was ruled by his younger brother Pandu. After Pandu's death, then Dhritarashtra became our guardian. And when Dhritarashtra dies, then Yudhisthira, the oldest son of Pandu, the heir apparent, will in course of time become king. It seems to me that as my blind father is quite helpless, I must, in order to prevent Yudhisthira's accession to the throne, contrive a way of killing Bhima. Because Bhima's the strongest of all the Pandavas, I think that if I start by killing him, that will disable all the rest of them.
Duryodhana and his brothers plan to throw Bhima into the Ganges, imprison Arjun and Yudhisthira, and then seize the kingdom and rule it.
Come, my brothers, let us go with the Pandavas for a little swim in the Ganges.
After the sports, they slept in their tents, being exhausted.
Shh! Now, Bhima has exerted himself more than the others, and as his food had been poisoned by me, he's now drowsy, and he lies down on the bank of the river. Let's quickly bind him with wild creepers, and then toss him into the water, for I have already caused sharp spikes to be planted on the banks, so that Bhima might, in falling, be impaled on the spikes, and in this way lose his life.
Fortunately, though, there was no spike in the place where Bhima fell, but poisonous water snakes bit his body. The poisonous food that he had taken was counteracted by the snake poison, and Bhima came to no harm, and presently the river washed him to a bank. Duryodhana thought that Bhima must have died.
Bhima has been thrown in the river, infested with poisonous snakes and fanged with spikes. Let's go back to the city with the rest of the party in great joy. Now I'll be king myself.
when Yudhisthira inquired about the whereabouts of Bhima, Duryodhan informed him that he had preceded them to the city. Yudhisthira believed Duryodhan, and as soon as he returned home, asked his mother,
"Mother, has Bhima already returned home before us?"
His anxious question brought forth the reply,
"No, my son Bhima has not yet returned. Is he not with you?"
"I fear some foul play against our brother. Come, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, let's go to the forest and look for Bhima everywhere."
But Bhima could not be found, and they returned in great sorrow. Sometime later, Bhima awoke and trudged wearily back home. Kunti and Yudhisthira welcomed him and embraced him in great joy. By the poison that had entered his system, Bhima became stronger than ever. Kunti sent for Vidura and told him in secret,
"Duryodhana is wicked and cruel. He seeks to kill Bhima since he wants to rule the kingdom. I am very concerned."
Vidura replied,
"What you say is true, Kunti, but keep your thoughts to yourself. For if the wicked Duryodhan is accused or blamed, his anger and hatred will only increase. Your sons are blessed with long life. You need have no fear on that account."
Yudhisthira also warned Bhima and said,
"Don't say anything on this matter, Bhima. From now on, we have to be careful and help one another and protect ourselves."
Duryodhan was surprised to see Bhima come back alive. His jealousy and hatred increased. He heaved a deep sigh and began pining away in sorrow. The Pandavas and the Kauravas learnt the practice of arms first from Kripacharya and later from Drona. A day was fixed for a test and exhibition of their proficiency in the use of arms in the presence of the royal family, and as the public had also been invited to witness the performance of their beloved princes, there was a large and enthusiastic crowd. Arjuna, the Pandava friend of Lord Krishna, displayed superhuman skill with his weapons, and the vast assemblage was lost in wonder and admiration. Duryodhana's brow was dark with envy and hate.
At the close of the day, just at sunset, there came suddenly from the entrance of the arena a sound, loud and compelling, like thunder. The sound made by the slapping of mighty arms in challenge.
All eyes turned in that direction. They saw enter through the crowd, which made way in awed silence, a godlike youth from whom light and power seemed to emanate. He looked profoundly round him, cast a negligent salute to Drona and Kripa, and strode up to Arjuna. The brothers, all unaware, by the bitter irony of fate of their common blood, faced one another, for it was Karna, born of Kunti before her marriage to Pandu. Karna addressed Arjuna in a voice deep as rumbling thunder.
"Ha! Arjuna, I shall show greater skill than you have displayed."
With Drona's permission, Karna, the lover of battle, then and there duplicated all Arjuna's feats with careless ease. Great was Duryodhan's exultation. He threw his arms around Karna.
"Welcome, O thou with mighty arms, whom good fortune has sent to us." I and this kingdom of the Kurus are at your command.
Karna replied.
I, Karna, am grateful, O king. Only two things I seek. Your love and single combat with Arjuna.
Duryodhan then clasped Karna again to his bosom.
If that's the case, my prosperity is all yours to enjoy.
As love flooded Duryodhan's heart, even so did the blazing wrath fill Arjun, who felt affronted, and glaring fiercely at Karna, who stood, stately as a mountain peak, received the greetings of the Kaurava of brothers. He said,
O Karna, killed by me, you will presently go to the hell appointed for those who intrude uninvited and speak unasked.
Karna laughed in scorn.
Ha! This area is open to all, O Arjun, and not to you alone. Might is the sanction of sovereignty, and the law is based on it. But what is the use of mere talk, which is the weapon of weaklings? Shoot arrows instead of words.
Thus challenged, Arjun, with Drona's permission, hastily embraced his brothers and stood ready for combat, while Karna, taking leave of the Kuru brothers, confronted him, weapon in hand. And as though the divine parents of the heroes sought to encourage their offspring and witness this fateful battle, Indra, the lord of the thunderbolts, and the sun god, Surya, of infinite rays, simultaneously appeared in the heavens.
When she saw Karna, Kunti knew him as her firstborn son, and she fainted away. Vidur instructed the maidservant to attend upon her, and she revived eventually. She stood stupefied with anguish, not knowing what to do.
As they were about to join in battle, Kripa, well-versed in the rules of single combat, stepped between them and addressed Karna.
This prince who is ready to fight with you is the son of Prita and Pandu and a scion of the Kuru race. Reveal, O mighty armed, your parentage and the race rendered famous by your birth. It's only after knowing your lineage that Arjuna can fight with you, for high-born princes can't engage in single combat with unknown adventurers.
When he heard these words, Karna bent down his head, like a lotus under the weight of rainwater. Duryodhan stood up and said,
If the combat cannot take place merely because Karna is not a prince, why, that's easily remedied. I crown Karna as the king of Anga.
He then obtained the assent of Bhishma and Dhritarashtra, performed all the necessary rites, and invested Karna with the sovereignty of the kingdom of Anga, giving him the crown, jewels, and other royal insignia.
At that moment, as the combat between the youthful heroes seemed about to commence, the old charioteer, Adiratha, who was the foster father of Karna, entered the assembly, staff in hand, and quaking with fear.
No sooner did he see him than Karna, the newly crowned king of Anga, bowed his head and offered humble obeisances in all filial reverence. The old man called him son, embraced him with his thin and trembling arms, and wept in joy, wetting with tears of love his head already moistened by the water of the coronation. At this sight, Bhima roared with laughter and said,
Look, he's only the son of a charioteer! Take up the driving whip, then, as befits your parentage. Thou art not worthy of death at the hands of Arjuna, nor should you reign in Anga as a king. Ha, 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 ha!
At this outrageous speech, Karna's lips trembled with anguish, and he speechlessly looked up at the setting sun with a deep sigh. But Duryodhan broke in indignantly.
It's unworthy of you, O Bhima, to speak in this way. Valor is the hallmark of a warrior, nor is there much sense in tracing great heroes and mighty rivers to their sources. I could give you hundreds of instances of great men of humble birth, And I know awkward questions might be asked of your own origin, Bhima. Just look at this warrior, his godlike form and bearing, his armor and earrings, and his skill with weapons. Surely there is some mystery about him, for how could a tiger be born of an antelope? Unworthy of being the king of Anga, did you say? My opinion is that he's worthy to rule the whole world.
Then, in generous wrath, Duryodhan took Karna in his chariot and drove away. The sun set. The crowd dispersed in tumult. There were groups loud in talk under the light of the lamps, some glorifying Arjun, others Karna, and others again Duryodhan, according to their predilection. The king of heaven, Indra, foresaw that a supreme contest was inevitable between his son, Arjun, and Karna. And he put on the garb of a Brahmin, thinking,
I will go to Karna, who is reputed for his charity, and beg of him his earrings and armor which make him infallible.
The sun god had already warned Karna in a dream that Arjun would try to deceive him in this manner. Still, Karna could not bring himself to refuse any gift that was asked of him.
As you have asked, O worthy Brahmin, I shall cut off the earrings and armor with which I was born and give them to you because you are a Brahmin.
Indra, the king of gods, was filled with surprise and joy. After accepting the gift, he praised Karma.
Yes, you have done what no one else would do. You've shamed me into generosity. Pray Karna ask for any boon that you may wish.
Karna replied,
I desire to get your weapon, the thunderbolt, which has the power to kill enemies.
Indra granted the boon, but with a fateful proviso. He said,
You can use this weapon against but one enemy, and it will kill him whosoever he may be. But this killing done, this weapon will no longer be available to you, but will return to me.
And with these words, Indra disappeared. Karna then went to Parashuram and became his disciple by representing to him that he was a Brahmin. He learnt of Parashuram the mantra for using the master weapon known as Brahmastra. One day, Parashuram was reclining with the head on Karna's lap when a stinging worm burrowed into Karna's thigh. Blood began to flow and the pain was terrible, but Karna bore it without tremor lest he should disturb his teacher's sleep. When Parashuram awoke and saw the blood which had poured from the wound, he said,
Dear pupil, you are not a Brahmin. Only a warrior could remain unmoved under such a bodily torment. Now you tell me the truth.
Karna confessed that he had told a lie in presenting himself as a Brahmin, and that he was in fact the son of a charioteer. Parashuram, in his anger, pronounced this curse on him.
Since you've lied to your guru, I curse you in the following way. The Brahmastra weapon you have learned shall fail you when you need it most. You will be unable to recall the invocatory mantra when the hour of your death comes.
It was because of this curse that at the crisis of his last fight with Arjun, Karna was not able to recall the Brahmastra spell, though he had remembered it till then.
Karna was the faithful friend of Duryodhan and remained loyally with the Kauravas until the end. After the fall of Bhishma and Drona, Karna became the leader of the Kaurava army and fought brilliantly for 2 days. In the end, the wheel of his chariot stuck in the ground, and he was not able to lift it free and drive the chariot along. While he was in this predicament, Arjuna killed him. Kunti was sunk in sorrow, all the more poignant because she had, at that time, to conceal that Karna was her son.
The teacher of the Pandavas and Kaurava brothers was named Drona. As a child, Drona, the son of a Brahmin named Bharadwaj, after completing his study of the Vedas and the Vedangas, devoted himself to the art of archery and became a great master. Draupad, the son of the king of Panchala, who was a friend of Bharadwaj, was a fellow student of Drona in the hermitage, and there grew up between them the generous intimacy of youth. Draupad, in his boyish enthusiasm, used to tell Drona often that he would give him half his kingdom when he ascended the throne.
After completing his studies, Drona married the sister of Kripa, and a son, Ashwatthama, was born to them. Drona was passionately attached to his wife and son, and for their sake desired to acquire wealth, a thing that he had never cared for before. Learning that Parasuram was distributing his riches among the Brahmins, he first went to him, but he was too late. Parasuram had already given away all his wealth and was about to retire to the forest. But still anxious to do something for Drona, Parasuram offered to teach him the use of weapons, of which he was a supreme master.
Drona joyfully agreed, and great archer as he already was, he became unrivaled master of military art, worthy of eager welcome as preceptor in any princely house in that warlike age. Meanwhile, Draupad had ascended the throne of Panchala on the death of his father. Remembering their early intimacy and Draupad's expression of readiness to serve him, even to the extent of sharing his kingdom, Drona went to him in the confident hope of being treated generously. But he found the king very different from the student. When he introduced himself as an old friend, Draupad, far from being glad to see him, felt it an intolerable presumption. Drunk with power and wealth, Draupad said,
"Oh, Brahmin, how dare you address me familiarly as your friend? What friendship can there be between a throned king and a wandering beggar? What a fool you must be to presume on some long past acquaintance to claim friendship with a king who rules a kingdom. How can a pauper be worthy of the friend of a wealthy man, or an ignorant boor of a learned scholar, or a coward of a hero? Friendship can exist only between equals. A vagrant beggar cannot be the friend of a king."
Drona was turned out of the palace with scorn in his ears and blazing wrath in his heart. He made a mental vow to punish the arrogant king for this insult and his repudiation of the sacred claims of early friendship. His next move in search of employment was to go to Hastinapur, where he spent a few days in retirement, in the house of his brother-in-law, Kripacharya. One day, the princes were playing with a ball outside the precincts of the city, and in the course of the game, the ball, as well as Yudhisthira's ring, fell into a well. The princes all gathered round the well and saw the ring shining in the bottom through the clear water, but could see no way of getting it out. They did not, however, notice that a Brahmin of dark complexion stood nearby watching them with a smile.
"Oh, great princes, you are the descendants of the heroic Bharata race. Why can't you take out this ball as well as anyone skilled in arms should know how to do? Do you want me to do it for you?"
Yudhisthira laughed and said in fun,
"Oh, Brahmin, if you take out the ball, we will see that you have a good meal in the house of Kripacharya."
Then Drona, the Brahmin stranger, took a blade of grass and set it forth into the well after reciting certain words of power for propelling it as an arrow. The blade of grass straightway sped and stuck into the ball. Afterwards, he sent a number of similar blades in succession. While clinging together, formed a chain, wherewith Drona took out the ball. The princes were amazed and delighted, and begged of him to get the ring also. Drona borrowed a bow, fixed an arrow on the string, and sent it right into the ring. The arrow rebounded, brought up the ring, and the Brahmin handed it to the prince with a smile.
Thus it was that Dronacharya became a teacher in the house of the young Pandavas and Kaurava brothers, and was brought to a position whereby, at a later time, he was able to defeat Draupada and snatch away his kingdom.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.